Chema. So we are with the stories from the Bhagavad Puran, which are very profound, both in their spiritual sense and in their occult substance. So we are on Canto 9 now, and it starts with a story of a girl who became a boy and became a girl again. So obviously people try to understand it purely from the physiological point of view. They would just wonder. But there is a biological aside to it, but that's for a little later. So when Shraddhade Manu, who is now, we are entering into this creation. So till now the stories are usually in the previous cycle. So in this cycle you have Shraddhade Manu, who is the son of Vivaswan. Vivaswan, we have heard Vivaswan in the Gita. When Sri Krishna is asked that, he says, I gave this yoga first to Vivaswan, the sun god. And then from Vivaswan it is transmitted down. So, as we know, the sun is very interesting. In several places we have this story. All the time sun is active. And yet all the time sun is static. If you really look at sun, it's very interesting. That's how we have one verse in the Upanishad. Suryo yatha sarva lokasya chakshu nalipyate chakshushay bahya dosha. Eko vashi sarva bhuta antaratma nalipyate lok dukhe nivahya. So on one way, sun is always static in the sky. Another way, it is constantly moving. Even physically, it is true that sun is not static. We experience it as static. But the whole universe is moving. Jagatyam jagat. So now we have Vivaswan, who is the sun god, whose progeny is Vivaswat Manu, also known as Shraddhade Manu. So he and his wife, four yugas of which we are a part or transiting away from. So it starts with that they have to start the creation. So when they pray, they do a yajna. And we have talked about yajna, so I'll not repeat again what really a yajna means. So as a result of the yajna, the man wants, Shraddhadev or Vaivasvatmanu, both names are there because he's son of Vivaswan. He wants a son. But his wife, she wants a daughter. So what do they have? Very interesting. The story could have shown that, well, he wanted a son, she had a daughter, and they had a son. But they had a daughter. Now, right from the beginning, it's like starting at a very high level. It's the mother. I mean, at the most practical level, most physiological or psychological level, the mother's thoughts have a much greater impact on the mother's thoughts have a much greater impact on the child than the father. Mother speaks about it. The mother speaks about it because she is the one who is bearing the baby. So that is the most important thing. So though he wants to, he starts with a very profound occult truth that, well, both want a child, but the thoughts of the mother are going to influence the child a lot more. So that's how mother says that the education begins with conception of the child. So both have, right from their education starts. And here it's about formation. So they have a daughter. So when they have a daughter, he is not very happy. Not because anything wrong with the daughter, but he wanted his son to continue the progeny. So he asks Rishi Vasishtha, who has performed the yajna, that why is it that I have a daughter, whereas I wanted a son? He says, well, because your wife was wanting a daughter. Therefore, we have a daughter. She says, what we can do? He says, okay, I'll ask destiny to intervene. And he prays, and then Lord appears, and then he says, okay, fine, I'm changing. So, see, this sex change, gender, all this, long back we have conceived of it, but in a very profound sense. It's not about changing the physical orientation. So then we have the lady changes, the girl changes into a boy. Now when you see that, you'll see, sir, kya hai? What is this girl child, boy child? That's how there'll be a typical interpretation. But the moment you hear the names, you will be filled with the aha feeling. Oh, that's it. So the name of the girl who is born, who was supposed to be a boy, is Ila. Now, Ila, there is a very famous kavya of, you know, Kamayani, Jayashankar Prasad. If you read that, you'll see the how profound, what a profound meaning it can be. So Ila is the goddess of intuitive speech, inspired speech. More than inspired, she's the goddess of intuition, intuitive speech. So she's dynamic, active all the time. But he wants a boy. So when he changes into a boy, the boy's name is Sudyumna. It is light, which is auspicious. So on one side, Ila is intuitive speech, light, which is dynamic. On the other side, the man who is light but contained within. They complement each other. So when he changes into a boy, so then, but the Lord says that, well, for 1 month he will remain like a boy and for 1 month he will remain like a girl. So you see, we have in our original story, the first comes is a girl, not like Adam and Eve where haddi se nikal ke Eve bana diya. Not like that, but the first is girl, then she changes into a boy. Now this is obviously about feminine and masculine energies. You can relate it to yin and yang and balancing of both, which is required. So yes, balancing is required. For 1 month he rules as a king, as a male, and for 1 month he is a princess. So he changes into, obviously the story is deeply symbolic. It's not some rishi took LSD and started hallucinating. That will be the silliest way to look at the whole story. That would show our inability to comprehend things. So then he is the first king of this particular Chaturyug, who is at once embodies within himself, if you want to now put it back on in our language, embodies within himself both the masculine and the feminine elements. As if this is a kind of future type which has been foreseen right at that point of time. So then he is governing the kingdom, and meanwhile there is a little interlude. So let's complete that. So he changes into a boy. Then one day he has gone to one of the forests which is up in the near Himalaya mountains. Obviously it's another domain of consciousness. He enters that forest along with his army. As soon as he enters that forest along with his army, he again changes into a girl. So that's how the boy changes into a girl. And then he gets the one month thing. But how does he change into a girl? He changes into a girl because it's a forest where only Shiva and Parvati are supposed to be together. And they are in their sport. Solitude and sport. And as soon as he enters with his army, Mother Parvati comes to know that here is a man who has entered. In fact, it's very interestingly described that in that forest, earlier some rishis come and immediately they go away. Because this is a... why they go away? It's not because of, it's the most greatest secret is the secret of Ishvara and Ishwari. Shivinder speaks about it even in his last writings. Very difficult to comprehend that. But here we'll not talk about it. We'll talk about it one of the days. It's very interesting. So all the rishis come, but the moment they say that, well, both Shiva and Parvati are in a very personal, intimate meeting, they go away. The union of the Purusha and Prakriti or Shiva and Shakti is the most ultimate secret, because whole creation begins from there. So they go away. Now this king enters Sudyumna and he changes into a girl. Now again there is a problem. Girl became a boy, boy becomes a girl. And then they pray to Shiva, and Shiva finally says, okay, but because Mata Parvati has is this forest is charged by her energy, so whoever comes here automatically changes into the feminine. You can't help it. So you see, feminine is a very dynamic energy. So it changes into the feminine, and therefore this is it. But I will do one thing. 1 month he can be a boy, 1 month he can be a girl. So that's how he governs the kingdom till he leaves his body. On the surface, the story may look very strange. But the moment we understand that Sudyumna is light in a concentrated form, which is within us, and then the illa is the dynamic light which expresses itself through speech. So both are needed in the fullness of humanity. A human being has to have both. It's not enough just to have one, the other has to be also present. But of course, this is about a highest possibility. So many of us speak, but we don't have the capacity of thought. And that's why today also we are discussing this. People just speak. They speak anything, everything. But they don't have sudyumna inside. So when you don't have sudyumna inside, when speech is just being thrown out as casual, random, it's no more illa. It degrades itself. So to have once again regain that intuitive speech, you have to cultivate, harness light. And that comes one. It starts with Narayan and then Shiva. All these powers have to come together. Mata Parvati. Then this kind of a ascension takes place. It's a pure yogic story of yogic ascension where there is light which is gathered inside. Then the light which is thrown into speech, forms of speech, expressive speech. And then there is the kingdom of humanity. First human race is being governed by them. In that dynasty, there is the famous king Ikshvaku. We know Ikshvaku's whole thing. And there is a little bit about also about, the birth of Shraddhadev's wife. That also comes from the lineage of the lunar lineage. Now, we'll not go into those lineages. But these lineages carry a meaning. Everywhere in Puranas, you will see lineages. Lineages after lineages. So, people wonder what kind of history is it. So, there is two aspects of our history. One is the obvious history. The other is the history which is concealed within. So, in Indian thought, now it's all distorted, but there used to be something called as Gotra. So Gotra you trace back to a Rishi. So that Rishi is someone who has started a work within his consciousness which gets transmitted down the line. So even the subconscious elements are transmitted. And we were reading that yesterday or a few days before, that how even the subconscious element, yesterday we were reading, they get transmitted down the generations. And sometimes children carry. What do they carry? They carry. That's why it is said ki karj chukana mata pita ka. What karj? It's not about the money. Who is bothered? Now nobody takes debt. But there is a work which has not been completed and that you have to finish. So in the Vedas you have these four kind of rin. These four kinds of powers which have shaped you. So pitra rin, Bhumi Rin, Dev Rin. So how do you chuka, how do you pay back these debts? So something of these have gone into the formation of your personality. And you have to take it. It's like a relay race. Take it to its ultimate culmination. So that's the story of Bhagirath also. That something which has started down the line through a process, you have to take it to its most logical culmination. That's why heredity becomes so difficult to escape unless you get its secret and take it to its logical culmination. So that's how you'll see the lineages of kings. And if you go back, now there are too many of them, I'm not touching, but if you go back, you can discover what is this lineage meant to. Chandravanshis, Suryavanshis, Yaduvanshis. Shri Krishna did a very smart thing, completely destroyed the Yaduvansh. Those who escaped, they ran away to, Middle East. I mean, and to the other side. Yeah, I mean, there is a description like that there are some ran away, not all were destroyed. So they spread the gospel, there is no Krishna, there is no, like some of the monkeys ran away when Sugriv gave them that, look, don't come back if you don't find Sita. They ran away east and west. And they declared there is nothing like Rama because they were afraid. And now this story, though it's a joke, but there is a meaning in it. So there is a lineage which continues, and in that lineage there is like a work which is unfinished. So heredity is not just about inheriting things which are atavistic, which are tendencies which you don't want. It's also a task given to you. It was seen in a very different way. So it is a task which, if you do it, it's like benefits the whole mankind. You are given with a certain problem, like we talked about the shadow the other time. So this is your particular little gift, parents gift, give you, whether you like it or not, both good and bad things. And the mother, one of the reasons why mother wanted the new creation to escape from this save this burden. So one of the things was, and if you go back to Gurukul also, this parental influence sometimes can greatly augment this problem inside you, because it's a tendency which you are carrying, both tendencies, good and bad. So if you want a new creation, you have to completely escape from that influence. That was the whole idea in Gurukul, when people went and they were away from parents. They couldn't meet like that. They were kept for 10 years, from 5 years to 15 years at least they were away. Because obviously the parental influence can be very, very problematic. I mean, this is something which many people don't like to hear, but it can be a disastrous actually. Because you're not fresh, you are burdened with all kinds of ideas. So in Gurukul, this was way, it there in our whole culture. Yeah, Gurukul meant that you are away, isn't it? 5 years you go, 15 years you come. You don't meet in between. Why? Because if it is so good, then they should allow. So now all that is gone. So that system is gone, whatever it is. We need not come back. But this is the story of the masculine and the feminine. Is our version of the yin and yang and Adam and Eve story, where the feminine comes first. Biologically, the feminine comes first. We all know. And again, we know, even if you go back to genetic understanding, then basis is, of course, X, and then you have XX or XY. So if you go any which way, the feminine element. And so what is the feminine element in creation? It is the dynamic element. And the masculine element is generally the passive element. It's more ideative. So you need both. If you want to really govern life, master life, you need both. You need the masculine element, which is more ideative. The thinking. So Manu wants a descendant who is masculine, but you also need the dynamic element who can convert that thought into practice, so practical aspects. So this is a story, very profound in its ramification. Very quickly they finish the story in just a few verses. And then comes another story, which is a very interesting story. This also we'll take up short, just a very brief note. And then we'll come to the main story of today. So the other story is that there is a rishi called Chyavan Rishi. We have heard about Chyavan Prash, no? So Chyavan Prash comes from the famous Chyavan Rishi. So the story goes that Rishi Chyavan is engaged in tapasya and deep tapasya. All ant hills have grown around him and all kinds of, you know, he can't be seen. He's in such a deep tapasya. And a king comes there, I am forgetting the name, his daughter is Sukanya, and she comes and sees his two like glowworms, like something glowing from a anthill. Actually, they are his eyes, and she doesn't understand. So she pokes, what is it? And she blinds him. So when she blinds him, because blood begins to come out, then she realizes, I have done something which I shouldn't have done. So to appease him, the king, her father, says, I give my daughter to you, please accept her in your service. And it's understandable because he has become blind. So now how does he take care of himself? So he says, well, you have to take care of him. You have to become his eyes. You have to become... So the Chyavan Rishi says, all right. But he is very old. He is... he hasn't taken a bath, you can imagine. So, but she takes care of the Muni very, very faithfully. Really takes care. Every little need he takes care. She takes care. So one day when there are these physicians of the gods who are very pleased with the devotion. So Ashwini Kumars. So they come. And they come also because though he is blind, he is performing a yajna called Som Yajna. Very deeply occult story. I mean, if one has to really get into it, it's again a very small few passages. But because it's so interesting, I thought I'll at least touch upon it. So he's doing a Soma Yajna where you get Ananda. Ananda, Soma is Ananda. Now it's not that barley water which we have. Okay, those who want to believe in barley water can try barley water. But Ananda, Soma gives youth. Convert it to Ananda and see, even at a most psychological level you will understand. You want to remain young, first learn to be happy. Try. The most difficult thing. When Dara came to ashram as an aside, so he asked, mother, give me some work. He is son of the Nizam in Hyderabad. So mother told him, be happy. After 2 days, he says, Mother, give me some easier work. It is very difficult to be happy. So, ananda is the elixir of immortality. And now we know it has profound psychological implications. People develop illnesses because there is a will to die. There is a will to live. There is a will to die. And it has an impact even on the cellular function. Because cells don't understand. They just register. They are like Morse code. will to die, running as a subterranean element. So the cells are, we are supposed to die, but we are living. So they start, you know, all kinds of illnesses they start. Will to live. Now here it's not will to live. That is the beauty. If you take traditional psychology, it's will to live and will to die. But if you go back to the will to live originally, it is eros and thanatos. If you go back to the Greek sense, I'm not talking of the way it is understood in the Freudian sense. But in the original sense, eros is the joy of life. So ananda is an elixir which makes you young. Very simple. Soma. So that's how he takes the soma. So why have Ashwini Kumars come? They are physicians. And Indra has deprived them of this elixir. He said, then you people will become capable of doing anything. So what do they do? There are things which are not found in heaven, or it is reserved in heaven only for special people. But on earth you can retrieve it and bring it out. You see, there is another story of Krishna, something which is found only in heaven. But Krishna brings it upon earth. It's there in Greek legend also, but in Greek legend it's very distorted. It means it's a little gory. Prometheus, must have heard about him. Prometheus steals the fire, brings to earth, and then is punished by Zeus. But in their story, there is another tree which is found only in heaven. But Sri Krishna brings to earth. Remember our wonderful Parijat flower. Beautiful story. And there is a fight. And you wonder, why is Krishna fighting over Parijat? I mean, why is Indra fighting over Parijat? And why is Krishna, she could have told Bhumiputri, Satyabhama. She is the daughter of earth. So she is thinking about earthlings. So after the Banasur Sangram, she says, I want this Parijat tree. She is thinking about the children of earth. Satyabhama is the incarnation of Mother Earth. So Krishna says, yes, now the time has come. So he goes, and Indra says, this I cannot give. This is a fight. All the gods are subdued, and that Parijat tree is planted on earth. Mother has used the word for this tree, aspiration. You see, and how Sri Aurobindo writes a line in Savitri, and aspiration in the nights profound. Why has used this word, an aspiration in the nights profound? We take a little bit detour because it adds the joy. So because if you see the aspiration flowers, you know, when do they, in night they fall on the ground. And they all fall like the petals, white petals will be below, and the orange thing will be pointing up. So in the morning, if you go to this Parijat tree, you'll see so many little flowers as if, you know, little flames. So when there is night, when there is little light, when all around is darkness, what we should do is aspire. This is given to man now, thanks to Sri Krishna, an aspiration in the night profound. See, got that from Indra. Otherwise, he doesn't want. Why he doesn't want to give? Because if they have it, earthlings have it, they will become like gods. Beyond gods. Aspiration is the power to take you to the supreme. Same thing happens now. Indra doesn't like. If these people will make soma, they will become immortal. And if earthlings become immortal, who is going to worship the gods? So always you will see this tussle in the Vedic lore. That gods grant, but they never want you to go beyond them. That's why Upanishads say, men are the cattle of the gods. So when mother said, no, that, you know, those who want to continue to worship the god, they may continue to do so. But for us, we go direct to the supreme. People didn't understand. But this is there in our own lore, wisdom. Gita says, absolutely. Gita says, Anya Deva and the whole. So this is there in our own thing. Well, gods can give you things. But the highest good, the highest truth is with the supreme, and it is reserved for man. That's the beauty. The gods can't access. They are typal worlds. So this is a story of transition when Chyavan Rishi, the story doesn't get over here. So he makes this elixir and he gives it to Ashwin Kumars. Now the moment they have it, Indra is not happy at all. He knows. He can do anything now. It's the ultimate elixir. It was reserved only for Indra. Indra is supposed to have the soam. But from that time onwards, it is made accessible. It's not Sanjeevani. It is the elixir of immortality, soma. So then from that moment onwards, because it's manufactured on earth, originally this possibility has been embedded. So then in that possibility, now that soma is prepared, Ashwin Kumars are agreed. So now it's time for this lady, Sukanya. Ashwin Kumars are very happy because ultimately they also got something share, because that's what the yajna was, that you give to the gods and the gods grant you. It was a transaction taking place. So they ask, now our turn to give, because you have given us elixir of immortality. What do I give you? So Sukanya says, if you can turn him into a young man. So Ashwin Kumars can do it. Mothers said in one of the stories where Prithvi Singh, the Ashwin Kumars came and he had a heart attack, and I have narrated this story, so I'll not narrate again, and how they went inside and did whatever organ massage and he recovered. So when he wrote to the mother, who were these people? She said, they were Ashwin Kumars. How does it matter to you? You prayed to me, I sent them. They normally don't treat humans. They are physician of the gods, because this is Martha Lok. They are not supposed to intervene. We have to go through our own process of evolution. They don't intervene unless the divine himself asks them. So that's how these physicians, they intervened. It is another example where they intervened, and Chyavan Rishi says, okay, they created a lake. We'll go and take a dip there. Now, water, body, always, there is a special kind of consciousness. Now, you see, this thought has come even in Lost Horizon movie. Some of us who might have seen it, that there can be special places which can be created where human beings can live very long. This is the idea in that other concept of those yogis living in Himalayas in a zone. Anyways, this idea has been there. How much it is true, and whether physical body or a subtle body, we don't know. But there is this idea that there, if you can create very special conditions, not just externally, but of consciousness, it's possible to regain youthfulness. So Chyavan Rishi is the first example. He takes a dip with the Ashwini Kumars in that body of water, a lake which has been created specifically by Ashwini Kumar, that if you take a bath, you have to go down right and come out and you will be young. Immortality nectar he has found. But, you know, old man being immortal, that is also being told. It's a curse. Okay, I'm immortal, but I cannot walk. You have to be young. Both problems are different. Sri Aurobindo says that in Savitri, immortality for the imperfect man will be not a boon, but a curse. So he has to grow in consciousness. Otherwise, imagine. So we had a very senior, our medical side, Cinemost rank officer in Air Force, and he had a heart attack. So everybody was going and giving him flowers, but behind the back they'll say, kab jayega? They were waiting. If he goes, at least, you know, because his nature was so difficult, that they were praying inside that he goes, but because he's a senior officer, they were also giving him flowers. This is the paradox we live in. So anyways, so they take a dip and they come out, and all three are now look-alike. He has also become. So now, this is the last test. It's not given just like that. So they say, okay, now, who is Chyavan Rishi? You find out. They are absolutely look-alike. See, this test is asked of Damayanti also. Now, what is this test? What is it, the power that can differentiate? In Nal Damayanti story, it's very clear. It is the psychic being in you which can differentiate. And because her love is psychic in origin, she has really served him like anything. So by the power of that service, she says, here is my man. And then both the gods are very happy. He says, yes, please take him along. He's your man. And then the two get married. they remain young. So after him, there is this Chyavanprash named. There are many ramifications of the story. So Chyavanprash eating, that's, it's not a herb that he somehow found. That's okay. I don't want the company to suffer any losses. But the point is, the Chyavan Rishi's original discovery is the nectar of immortality, the Soma. He has done a yajna, and the gods, which have to be really pleased and appeased with this yajna, is Dashvini's. And the beautiful part is that he, though his eyes are pierced, he doesn't curse, he doesn't get angry. So there are many things which are interconnected in that story which one can find. And then she takes care and finally devoted service, and he changes into a young man and goes, and they live happily, and then whenever they want to ascend, they ascend back. That's also there in the story. So this is the story of youthfulness and immortality, giving us some clues here and there. Not all the clues, but some clues. Then comes the another third story, which is very interesting. And that's the main story. The story, many of us may have heard of King Ambarish. Ambarish, some of the Vaishnava people must have heard, no? Ambarish is a king, and he is a king who is amazing in this sense that he doesn't believe that I have to go to a forest to do sadhana. He is a real karma yogi in the real sense. So he is living in the world. He has conquered all the kingdoms, the seven continents, Saptadweep, that's how the Prithvi is known. So all the continents he has conquered. He actually governs them very beautifully. But he is attached to nothing. He is married, he has children, but absolutely inwardly he is unattached. And looks after everything and everyone. And at the same time inside, he is all the time praying to the Supreme Lord. He is connected. He just knows that I am his servant and I am taking care. So that's how life passes. And then once he is performing a certain ritual, Ekadasi and Dwadasi Vrat. It has its own occult significance. I am not suggesting people should do Ekadasi Vrat. But Ekadasi has that day, from the point of view of the play of forces. All this was studied. Now fasting and all is not the relevant thing. Now why is the 11th day important? If you go by the numerology system, it's very interesting. 11 and number 12, both. It's like from 11, a cycle of numbers gets completed and a new cycle begins. So it's connecting two kinds of cycles, purely numerologically. And 12 is the number of creation, completeness. So anyways, we'll not go into it. So when he is doing the fasting, he for a long time, he has fasted only taking. He has that particular day, he has not eaten anything. He is giving to everybody who comes. Brahmins, nothing to do with Pandya and Shukla, for God's sake. Brahmins have nothing to do with surname. So, but those who were mendicants, who were devoted to knowledge, they were the Brahmins. So he gave them, because they are not earning, they are only devoting themselves to gathering wisdom and sharing it without money. They were not asking money, so they were living on Dakshina. There was no other way to live. That's, they had to observe those austerities. It was not easy to be a Brahmin, incidentally. I mean, a true Brahmin. So Ambarish is a king, Kshatriya. But he has got everything that one can imagine. The gods appear, they say, you want moksha? He says, no, I don't want moksha, I don't need. I just want the divine, and he is all the time with me. So they give him all the four kinds of mukti, samipya mukti, salokya mukti, sadrishya mukti. He says, even these I don't want. I just want to be in the service of the Lord. And he is just in the service of the Lord. Now we'll understand why the mother insisted on work here in the ashram. And she spoke of it. And Sri Aurobindo spoke of it. She says, mother doesn't give mantra, she gives work. It may sound very casual, mantra neither, because we are so used to mantra. But in our own scripture, there is a story where he had no mantra, no other meditation. He was only doing service. That's how it is described. It's not my description. Ambarish Rishi was only devoted to serving the Lord in countless ways. It is described very interestingly how he served. That is also described. That's very interesting. That how was he serving? What work he was doing? So there is a description which the Lord himself says, you know how he has served me. But though he tells it later, we can talk about it now. He says, with his eyes, He was seeing me everywhere. So what happens when you see the divine in everybody? There'll be no why this kolavari finished. How will you fight? You can't fight. You see the divine and then you fight. You can't fight. That way, that kind. You will fight, but only at the divine impulsion if necessary for the divine will. But there will be no hatred, no anger. None of these things will be there. With his ears, he was only hearing the divine name. You remember? There is a prayer in one of the Upanishad. Bhadram karnevi shanyam deva. It is that. He was living that truth. So, it is advice to all of us. This all there in Bhagavad. Ki, don't hear things which are, in fact, there are people who take a lot of joy in parninda. And those who are devoted to the divine, they should not indulge in all these things. When such things are happening, shut your ears. Listen only to things which are beautiful. Why? Because your consciousness is filled with these things. So he was hearing all the time beautiful things in his ears. It is described that he was only hearing about me. When he was speaking, he was speaking only about him. You can speak about the Lord endlessly, and our Kabir Das has said, Saat samand ki masi karo, lekhini sab banarai, dharti to kagat karo, harikun likha na jai. It doesn't mean that he is all the time doing mala jap. It means that whatever he is speaking impelled by the divine, which will help in the divine work. This is exactly what Mother says in Discovery of the Psychic Being, that before you speak, pause and see whether your speech is actually going to help in the work or not. Even in fact, she says, when you speak abusive words, slander, all this gossip, then it is like committing spiritual suicide. These are her words. So what is the importance of speech? She says, he was speaking only about me. Okay, when he was touching, it goes on to describe, he was touching only me. How was he touching only him? So it is said that he would go in the company of those who love me. That's how it is described. And then Lord tells, this comes later, but not only he was taking care of those, touching those who love the Lord, even those who are in serving those who have loved for the Lord. Even their service was to him serving the divine. So, because always it may be difficult to serve the Lord. So those who are serving the Lord and those who are serving those who serve the Lord. And I remember once when I had come here, so in Desiree we have people, no? Who have, so people used to ask that, you know, who are these people? I used to say, these are people who have served the Mother. He said, yo, that's it. I said, see, they are very lucky that they are fortunate that they have served the Mother. But we are fortunate to serve them who have served the Mother. Now you understand why you feel happy there. Because it's described as one of the yoga. Is the whole description of Ambarish yoga, what he was doing. So where was he walking? He said whenever he walked, he was walking going to the Lord. Not like, okay, let's go and play a game of cards, let's go and enjoy life. No. For him, every place was a habitation of the Lord. What about smell? Everything through the senses, through his thought, through his heart, he was engaged in service of the Lord. That's how the divine himself tells him, the Supreme Lord. But that story comes a little later. So meanwhile, when he has finished all this, suddenly lands up who? The most difficult muni, Durvasa. Durvasa has given black and blue to everyone. This is the only story where Durvasa is humbled and very badly humbled. So he comes and he welcomes him. He says, come, please come. And he says, I'll take a bath and come and then I'll take the... Meanwhile, his fasting time is over. So he doesn't want to eat. But problem is that as per the custom, you have to eat before a certain period of time, before Ekadasi transits into Dwadasi. So he consults all of them. He says, I can stay without eating. I have stayed so many days with just water. They say, no, but you are supposed to do it. This is the whatever is the significance. He says, okay, I'm not going into it. We can understand that significance part, but this is a very minor thing. So he says, all right, so what do you suggest? He says, you have to break the fast. So he says, okay, I'll break the fast. At the same time, I will keep his man, his pride. So what does he do? He drinks water. He says, water is breaking the fast, but water is also not breaking the fast. So Ambarish drinks water. And he says, now I'll wait. Durvasa Rishi comes after a bath, nice. And when he sees him, now he is after all a Rishi, he understands this fellow has done, taken water. So he is quick to anger. So he creates a demon out of his anger. His anger takes the form. Now, see, anger is a demon which can chase. Now we, in the Purana, the story is related like he picks up his hair and with his lock he creates a demon. Demonic energy, which is very violent, aggressive and very fiery. Now what he didn't know, as this demon is marching towards Ambarish, he is sitting quietly, he is not bothered. Because long back, as a result of his prayer and worship, Lord Vishnu has told him, my Sudarshan Chakra will always protect you. He didn't know what he is signing up for. Now what is Sudarshan Chakra? Sudarshan Chakra is the dynamic light and force of the divine. There is nothing which can beat it. It is the dynamic force and light of the divine. So, as this demon comes, Sudarshan Chakra becomes active and finishes him. Now when Durvasa sees this, he starts running. And Sudarshan Chakra is after his back, touching his back. This is a very picturesque description. And it's so much fire that he starts burning. So he first goes to, where will he go? He first goes to Brahma, you are the creator, do something. He says, sorry. I cannot do anything. This is a bhakta and Lord's protection. Don't come near me. Go away. I may also get burnt in the process. So he then goes to Shiva. Shiva says, go, go, go. Fast. This is Lord Hari Sudarshan and you dare to come near me. I want peace in Kailash. I can't do anything. Go. So he runs to Lord Vishnu. He says, okay, his Sudarshan Chakra he will take back. He says, you know what? There is a problem, Durvasa. You forgot that if it is me you had insulted, you know I don't feel insulted. Bhrigu had done all this. But if you insult my devotee, I'm sorry, I can do nothing. Remember once, there is a real story of here in the ashram. Somebody was saying all kinds of things, angry, Mother Sri Aurobindo, anything, any. And then, crazy fellow, and then night he had a very swollen knee. Next day he went to the mother and he said, Mother, did it happen because of this? He said, no, my child, I don't. I give only love, but you know, there are gods, they don't like it. So he says, I can't help it. They do their dharma. So he says, I cannot do anything because greater than me is the devotee in whose heart I dwell. I have given myself to the devotees. And you see, if you, and of course by devotee is meant a true devotee. I mean, somebody like Ambarish who has given his life. And it is said that you should never ever, because it will fall back, even a magic you do. These are all well-known things. If you do a magic against a devotee, it will fall back. So he says, if anyone has a right to forgive you, it is, go back, Ambarish has the right to forgive you, I cannot. Please, don't involve me, Sudarshan Chakra will not leave you. So he runs back to Durvasa and he falls at his feet. Then there is a very nice prayer to Sudarshan Chakra, which Ambarish does. He is full of forgiveness. It's a sign of the devotee of the Lord. He doesn't carry all that grouse inside. So he prays to Sudarshan Chakra. He says it's okay. So Sudarshan Chakra becomes shant and goes. And then Durvasa says, give me prasad. I have never been. He is humbled completely by all that happens. And for all, as far as I know, one and only story where Durvasa Rishi comes back totally humbled. And he says, I never knew that a devotee of the Lord can be so powerful. Because Durvasa, he says, gone left, right, center, even the gods, they are worried. But then he receives and comes back. He says, give me something from your hand, that will be prasad for me. So, but Ambarish is a very humble person. All who are devotees of the Lord, they are very humble. Why? Not because they are fake humility. Sir, aap kitne bade, that is all fake. Huh? No genuine spiritual person can be fooled by all this. He may even walk away from there. He may find it quite disgusting, show off. But there is a genuine humility because a devotee knows he is nothing except for the Lord. And that's exactly where when Sri Hari explains to Durvasa, he explains, I dwell in the heart of the devotees. And if you hurt me, it is okay, I will forgive you. But if you hurt a devotee, then I am duty bound to protect him. And when I protect him, then you know what's going to happen. And this is only my chakra. If you go further, then I myself will enter into the fray. You didn't know this? So Durvasa Rishi is completely humbled. That's where he describes all these things about the devotee of the Lord. And he described very beautifully what is the realization of Ambarish. He says, all the time I dwell in him and he dwells in me. This is a double realization. In the Isha Upanishad you have a verse to be meditated upon. This is one of the meditation practices. Even Sri Aurobindo speaks about it. So it's a triple meditation which is given passingly in Srimad Bhagavat Puran. The divine is in you. All is in the divine. And then if one has the courage to go further, all is the divine. There is nothing else but the Lord. That is the highest. We see in Mother's agenda, toward the end, Mother speaks about it. All is the Lord. That's very, very difficult. You have to go beyond a certain. But at least that I am in the Lord and the Lord is in all. I am dwell in the Mother and Mother is in all. She dwells in me. This is the meditation that he gives to Durvasa. It's a turning point for him. And then Durvasa comes back and he says, thank you so much. I'm sorry. And then Ambarish Rishi continues with his life, governing the earth in a most beautiful way. So I'll just read some portion because it's very beautiful. Okay, now this is where Durvasa Rishi is running. Imagine the scene. Quick to curse. Everybody is afraid. But he's running from a mortal, Ambarish. It's also a sign that a human being has the greatest possibility. And so all of them send him finally to the Supreme Personality. Durvasa Muni, the great mystic, scorched by the heat of the Sudarshan Chakra, fell at the lotus feet of Narayana. His body trembling, he spoke as follows. O infallible, unlimited Lord, protector of the entire universe, you are the only desirable objective for all devotees. The language is amazing. Bhagavad is, you know, people who say that Indian civilization, they draw that they were primitive, they should read this. Where do you find sign of anything primitive, even in the most, you know, the conversation, the way it is taking place? My Lord, please give me protection. And so he prays, and then the Supreme Personality of Godhead said to the Brahman. He is a Brahman, and Ambarish is a Kshatriya. But when you are devotee, you are beyond everything. He says, I am completely under the control of my devotees. Sri Aurobindo writes this in the Yoga of Divine Love. You can refer to it. He says, there is nothing impossible for the lover of the divine because he is the very self of the beloved. Nothing impossible. He says, human tongue cannot utter. This is sure in those words. People have turned him into a philosopher sitting somewhere on some supramental height and he kept on saying, what rubbish to Dilip. he says, but they have turned him into. Because it's a pride of the mind that, oh, I can read the life divine. So, sometimes I say, when somebody says, I have read the life divine, and I said, have you understood the life divine? Reading is the easier part. And to live even a little bit of it. Even the first passage, human aspiration. So what does the Lord say? He says, indeed, I am not at all independent. It is very beautifully put. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desire. Now there is a categorization of who the devotees are. They are not asking anything material from me. I sit only within the course of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotees of my devotee are very dear to me. What a, oh best of the brahmanas, without saintly persons for whom I am the only destination. I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. This is ekoham bhavishyam. He says that's why the creation is. It's a two-way joy. Without them, what am I? That's why I have to protect them. Ekaki na ramyate. How will I enjoy if they are not there? Since pure devotees give up everything and live their life, this is nothing to do with external giving up, because it's described in the beginning, Ambarish outwardly gave up nothing. But his whole life is dedicated to service. Their life simply to serve me. Without any desire for material improvement in this life or in the next, how can I give up such devotees at any time? You remember Gangadharan was some of us, small little room in the stair, and he has written 108 names of Sri Aurobindo. He had such supramental experiences. And a young boy of 17, he ran away, swam the little rivulet from Kadar. His house was nearby. And came to Sri Aurobindo, amazing life. And how the mother, and he is the one person who had genuine supramental experiences. And if you look at him, so the pure devotees who by service are equal to everyone and completely attached to me in the core of the heart, bring me under their full control. The Lord is under the control of the devotees. My devotees who are always, this is a, also the, like, who are these devotees? Nowhere he is saying that every day morning they do ghanti vajana, they do this specific prayer, you know, they light up an agarbatti. Nowhere it is written. All the description is pure psychological, their inner state. My devotees who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service are not interested even in the four principles of liberation. Highest devotee. And Shobindu writes that precisely. That the last liberation has to be liberation from the desire for moksha. Now, don't want to be free. We want to be bound to the Lord forever. Why do I want freedom? I want to be bound to the Lord forever. So he says, even the four principles of liberation, salokya, sarupya, samipya and sarsti, although these are automatically achieved by their service, they automatically get these things. Sri Aurobindo writes all this in Synthesis of Yoga in the beginning. What then is to be said of such perishable happiness as elevation to higher worlds? He says, this they don't ask. Easily they can get it. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. Just imagine. This is how, you know, when Shiva is asked that, aap kiska dhyan karte hain? When Sati asks him, whom are you meditating upon? He says, main apne hirde mein Vishnu ji ka dhyan karta hun. Baad mein wo kehte hain, Ram mere hirde mein hai. He says that, why Ram? This is very interesting, by the way. Ki Vishnu understandable, he is God. Why Ram? He is Vishnu, okay, but he has come as a human. That's where repeatedly you will find the greatness of the human being. When the divine takes a human birth, and all of us in a certain sense are divine in our essence, going through the human challenges, and yet when we remain steadfast in service, in devotion and love, that is something which even the gods cannot achieve. It's repeatedly there in different stories in the Vedas, the Puranas, the Upanishads, because taking a human birth and still remaining of that high order. We have spoken about the story of Anusuya. Same story. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. Oh Brahmana, let me now advise you for your own protection. What an advice, and from where? Please hear from me. By offending Maharaj Ambarish, you have acted with self-envy. Therefore, you should go to him immediately, without a moment's delay. One's so-called prowess, when employed against the devotee, certainly harms he who employs it. Actually, Madhurendra Shobhinde has spoken these things. That's what is so fascinating. Here the language is different. It says it falls back. Because when you are under that protection. Thus, it is the subject, not the object, who is harmed. For a Brahman, austerity and learning are subtly auspicious. That you are a Brahman, you are doing all these learning, sacred things, scriptures you are reading and doing austerities. But when acquired by a person who is not gentle, such austerity and learning are most dangerous. That also he cautions. Oh, best of Brahmanas, you should therefore go immediately to King Ambarish, the son of Maharaj Nabhaga. I wish you all good fortune. If you can satisfy Maharaj Ambarish, then there will be peace for you. What a beautiful story. Even his father's story is very interesting. But I am not going to, so many stories, all of them fascinating. But we'll stop here because I am waiting for the Krishna Leela to start. So we are on Canto 9. Canto 10 or 9 and 10 is basically Krishna Leela. And by Canto 12 everything will be over. But there are many, many stories in that. Many chapters in that. Jai Ma.